Welcome to the inaugural Underground podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Poynton. Over the next three episodes, we will examine how independent music artists negotiate a heavily corporatized music industry. The last 20 years has seen this industry undergo change and overcome challenges as a result of technological developments that have not only revolutionized how music is created, but more importantly, how music is distributed. This series focuses specifically on the flows of labor, culture and capital, and the adoptive strategies employed by independent actors from three very different viewpoints. First, we investigate the rise of independent music labels as an alternative to pursuing a major record deal. In the second episode, we examine the benefits and unforeseen pitfalls of technologies such as SoundCloud that connect artists directly to the end user. And finally, we investigate the importance of building social networks outside of industry as a way to establish creative spaces for independent actors to share their music. By combining existing academic research with the personal anecdotes of independent artists, this series aims to highlight how the corporatized music industry disadvantages independent actors disproportionately. To understand how certain technological developments have disrupted the industry, American scholar William Asprey writes that prior to the 1990s, the system for distributing records was controlled by six major record companies. The structural arrangement of the industry saw labels disproportionately benefit from their oligopoly position and exclusive access to the means of production, distribution, and promotion. Put simply, the relative cost required to secure studio time to record an album and then effectively distribute and promote that album placed aspiring musicians in a state of flux, leaving artists no real choice but to sign with major labels. More difficult was the situation for those artists experimenting with or pioneering new genres of music that were deemed commercially unattractive by major labels. The advent of both digital recording and MP3 file compression led many to believe that access to the means of musical production and distribution would finally become democratized. Peer-to-peer file sharing sites such as Napster were celebrated for disrupting property, as fans could now download music from fellow file sharers for free. While a number of legal cases levied by the Recording Industry Association of America crippled Napster, digital file sharing came to be realized as the future of musical distribution. After a number of failed attempts to create a successful business model around file sharing, Steve Jobs finally broke through, launching the iTunes Music Store in 2003. Additionally, the emergence of third-party websites such as YouTube, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp presented a virtual space for artists to freely share their music with the world. Pascal Preston and Jim Rogers, two scholars from Dublin City University, note in their research that these specific technological innovations were commonly perceived as significantly disrupting the role and power of industry's major companies in terms of their relationships with final consumers. Furthermore, the success stories of artists such as Justin Bieber, Mac Miller, Chance the Rapper, and XXXTentacion, who are all discovered online, have contributed to an enduring story that anyone can post their music online and make it big. The reality, however, for independent artists is much more damning. In many cases, these success stories are the exception, not the rule. Sure, production costs have gone down, so have the barriers that used to prohibit artists from connecting directly with end users, though it is unwise to think that all artists are now equally discoverable. Talented artists and their work frequently flounder in these vast and dense digital wastelands, unnoticed, untouched, and unappreciated. Preston and Rogers poignantly state that independent labels and artists have to compete against the financial resources major labels have at their disposal, which ensure that their own artists are heard, recognized, and promoted in mainstream popular culture. These success stories effectively misrepresent the reality for independent artists, who routinely navigate the industry without the same level of recognition. A more adequate representation of what the industry is really like is told by the independent record labels that have carved out and cultivated cult-like followings. UK-based hip-hop label Yogo Cop Records was founded in a basement in Brighton 5 years ago. Since then, the label has broken into the underground market and has come to be recognised and respected within the wider UK hip-hop community. After a number of smaller releases, the success of Yogo Cop Records was typified this year when the label released their first LP project, The Garden of England. Recently, I had the pleasure of speaking in depth with one of the key figures behind Yogo Cop, Tom Yum. A DJ and turntablist, Tom has taken responsibility for much of the work done behind the scenes, such as organising invoices, putting in orders for CDs, cassettes and records, as well as packaging and distributing online orders for label merchandise and music. I started off by asking Tom about what he understood to be the label's main goal.
The goal of the thing ultimately is not at all really to make money. But it's more that it shouldn't really cost money at this point, you know what I mean? Like, ideally, you know, it's... I'm always kind of surprised at how well it's going and how people really like what we're doing and want to support. And it's only fair that, like, when people do support like that, that it's kind of what they're offering us is put forward into enabling us to do, to give more of what they're trying to support, if that makes sense. So we don't make any money, we just make sure that we've got enough money to keep doing it for now.
Asymmetrical to commercial record labels, Gogo Cop has no interest in extracting surplus value from their projects. The sort of short-term pragmatism which defines how they operate is oriented to ensure that each project they release funds the next one down the line, thus allowing the artists on the label to continue doing what they love to do. As mentioned, the 2017 release of Benedict's The Garden of England was a pivotal moment for the label, as it signified 2 years of hard work to get the label in the financial position to do so. I asked Tom about the planning and processes involved in getting the record finished once it was recorded.
So when we were talking about how, I don't know, this is, yeah, the kind of the result of maybe 2 years of like working out how it is that we can operate as a label. Ben was away for a little bit and came back and was, you know, talking about he wants to do this project, things like this. And so we were saying, like, we're probably just in about a position to actually make proper big run vinyl LPs. The music obviously has to be recorded and mixed down and ready to master, and then we handle mastering. We would need, in the same way that we have the recorded audio and we send it to someone else for mastering, we would need essentially like the raw artwork that we then send to our graphics guy to kind of compose into the finished cover art or the, you know, the back cover. He also lays out on templates for vinyl, CD and cassette and everything. And then we need like, we were aiming for 5 videos with this one, with the last project. So essentially we're like, when the music is done, he gets sent to master, we start figuring out how the artwork is going to be done, and shoot a load of videos, and yeah, then the masters go. Kimo mastered it for us. It took him maybe 3 days, and then just as soon as the artwork is done, we send the artwork templates and the mastered audio to the various manufacturing outlets, so whether that's CDs or cassettes or vinyl, and upload it to Spotify and all the rest as well.
An interesting reference here that Tom makes is to risk. Now, all record labels encounter risk in some way, shape or form when it comes to releasing and funding projects. However, when the funding comes from your back pocket and not from the top down, the proverbial stakes are much higher. Now, the demand for vinyl releases in the digital era has proved to be an effective way for independent artists to monetize their music. Up until this year, Gogo Cop had only done a number of small-scale pressings, releasing 37-inch singles at a time for some of their most coveted tracks. Such small-scale runs were highly successful for the label, as these 7-inch singles were lathe cut, which opposed to pressing records is a much cheaper option for the amount of records they wish to distribute. However, when it came to getting this album on wax, the most cost-effective option was to get these records pressed, which requires an initial record to be cut, which in turn serves as the master from which all subsequent records are pressed from. The relative cost in pressing records is much higher per unit, but the best way to offset these costs is to get more records pressed, though for Gogo Cop to misjudge the market and order too many would prove catastrophic. Here, Tom reveals how the label will approach this dilemma.
Well, it's so the minimum is 250, so you can't do any Well, you could, I mean, if we went to a different plant, I think maybe you could get 100. But in terms of making the thing like cost effective, obviously the more you do, the cheaper it is. So 250 was the lowest amount, and I think that was like 1,180. And then for an extra like 70 quid or whatever it is, you could get another 50. And we were like, well, that's, you know, might as well just do that. I think so. It was 250, 300, and then 500. And we were like, we can't really hit 500. You know, it's the first one we've ever done. We don't really know how it's going to go. Like, I mean, it's kind of, it was good. So Ben's like been around for a while and has worked real hard to build himself a following. He's been pretty active in the kind of, I don't know, the scene, for want of a better word. This is gonna, for a little while, tie up pretty much all of our money. He was a good candidate to go first because he has been around, he has that following, people like you say, so like yourself, you know, and plenty of others have been following since 4 or 5 years ago and kind of waiting for something like this to come along. So I think there was like, there was a bit of anticipation, and people wanted to support. So, I mean, it's fairly common now for smaller labels like us to do pre-sales on records. And it's very, no, I don't really agree with it. I don't really like it, but it's kind of a necessary thing now. Well, I don't really like taking people's money 3 months before they get anything for it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, in the thing is I've done it myself, and when I have done it, I've been well aware that, like, you know, I'm supporting something that probably wouldn't have happened if I hadn't, and I'm happy to wait, and like, it's only 20 quid, I'll live. But at the same time, I much prefer being able to pay and receive the thing, like, there and then. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's somewhat cynical as well, because I think in order to kind of start building awareness for a project, you have to kind of mention that it's happening. And I always heard this thing about, like, the first time someone hears about, like, a certain project, that's the time that they're most excited about it, and that's the time they're most likely to buy it. So, I mean, as I say, you know, we're not, like, raging capitalists. We're not really trying to make a fortune out of it. But there is risk, and we would like to, you know, if we can recoup the money from this project, it means we can do the next project, which is kind of the goal of the thing. So if we're able to let people pay for it, if, you know, if they want to pay for it, the first time that they find out that it's happening, that sort of, that works well, do you know what I mean? But it's, yeah, it's handy for us because, so like I say, this whole project was about 2,500, which at the time was pretty much our whole budget. And if we don't pre-sell it, for like 6 to 8 weeks, we just would have no money. So we couldn't really, you know, we couldn't do any t-shirts, we can't do hoodies, we can't do any stickers for, don't know, for the next, like, we've got some projects in the pipeline, that require like budgets for videos and stuff. We can't put any of that forward. So as soon as we can start trying to recoup on what we've laid out, the quicker we can keep things moving forward, basically.
Much of Yogo Cop's operation, not unlike other independent labels, relies on the artists within the label to perform additional forms of labor. In speaking with Tom about this dynamic, he illustrates how the label utilizes some of their artists' individual skills to delegate responsibility and essentially keep their costs down.
The good things about the collective is that obviously everyone has their individual strengths, and if we're able to kind of utilize those it's good for everyone. So he's definitely like, he has an eye for like, for a good photo, like, I don't know, he's done a couple of videos. Generally his like eye for aesthetics is maybe better than most people's. So with things like, you know, when we're getting a project ready or whatever, we will say that like he's the guy.
Yeah.
So like that was a good example of like where having Sam involvement, that the product that we've, you know, the final project was that bit better because we'd like trusted him to, you know, we know that he knows more about that stuff than we do. So whilst it might not seem so important to us, if it's something that he's like, no, we have to do it this way, or we have to change this or that, that's then like, you know, we're willing to trust him in that. The same goes for like, so with Mr. Slips, he's really good at like the audio side of things, so he does a lot of the mixing. He'll master like a lot of the projects, the stuff that comes on 7 inches, a lot of it's mastered by him. And so we'll send him the final mixes of, or the final masters to listen to. And Ben is kind of in the like in that same role, but with things like promotion, stuff like that. So a lot of priorities, things like, I don't know if you saw the FUBAR radio video. Yeah, so that was Ben obviously has sort of gained a few good ideas about like building a following, or you know, how to find opportunities for yourself. So he's arranging things like this for other people.
Inherently, much of this work isn't really thought of as work. The artist's commitment to the label and what it represents sees him willingly make such sacrifices to keep Yogo Cup afloat. As Tom mentioned, the label is 100% for fun. However, Tom is acutely aware of the challenges that lay ahead in the future as the label continues to grow.
So as it grows, ultimately it will always take more time and more effort and things like that. And like, it's definitely, you know, it's 100% like for fun thing up to now. But on the other hand, it's like, so when the record was coming out and things like that, it's like I had to take a few days off work here and there to like pack orders or sort of wholesale or whatever it was. And you start to think, well, actually now this is starting to like cost me money to do. I think at the very least, it would be nice. So if it, you know, if it, it gets to the point where I'm like, well, I need like one day a week in order to keep it going and help it grow and things like that, I need a day a week to really dedicate to it. Because there is, you know, there's a huge amount of stuff. Even now, like I think of things that if I had the time, I could do that would be genuinely beneficial. And it's just about kind of, you know, as it is at the moment, prioritizing certain things because we only have so much time or whatever. I think we're all fairly realistic about like how, you know, whether we would make money from the label, which is pretty much like going to be a no forever. and that's not so much of a problem. It's more kind of if there's things that can go along with that. So like, so I do all of the orders and stuff. So anything that you've ordered, I've packed up and sent. And that, like, again, as we get busier and busier, that takes up more and more time. And when I was working at the record shop, we used to do that. So fulfill order for High Focus Records. And they used to pay us a fee to do that. So with something like that, if it gets to the point where we say like we this takes up so much time that we kind of have to outsource it, or pay ourselves to do it because it would cost either way. Do you see what I mean? So, like, whilst I'm not saying to Ben, like, yeah, we'll put your record out and I'll take X amount of profit of that, there are other things along the way that kind of, where you can start to kind of justify putting so much time into it because you're getting kind of reimbursed for anything you might have lost or whatever it is. In terms of like the future of the thing, it's really, I don't know, man. I'd like every so often you kind of look back at the thing and think like it's, there's maybe like a turning point at some point. So we've got obviously like a small roster of artists, and in the past there's kind of this feeling of like, so as I was saying right at the start of the conversation, right, the label when it started was kind of like, it's just a necessary thing, but it didn't really, you know, ultimately it's just like a word that appears on the back of your CD and something that you tell people about. It doesn't really, it didn't operate in any true sense of the word, if that makes sense. And the further I got involved, it kind of, it became clear that we actually really did need to like work out the roles and responsibilities of the label versus the artists, or you know, what people could expect of this thing, because in the very early days it was so Team Dreams was like a collective, Yoga Cop was the label, but it was all kind of the same thing, and we didn't really see it as like, this thing is the label, this thing is the group, these are the artists, blah blah blah. It was just like, oh, we're all just doing this stuff, no one has any specific responsibility, we just do what needs to be done.
It is clear that there will likely come a point where a lot of the background work will eventually become a burden. How the collective responds, though, will ultimately determine the label's future. Reflecting on my conversation with Tom, which ran for over 2.5 hours, a lot of my initial doom and gloom thoughts about the independent music industry were reconstituted. It became clear that perceptions of success for independent artists will ultimately determine their outlook. Talking with Tom, it was evident that a lot of the artists have invested a significant amount of time and emotional energy in keeping the label afloat. While many of these artists may never make it as full-time musicians, the goal of the label has never been to turn a profit. Their pragmatic approach of constantly reinvesting money back into the label in order to fund future physical releases has proven successful and ensures that Yogo Cop Records will continue to be a beacon of UK hip-hop for years to come.